Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. For the rest of the hour, we're looking back to a conversation we had in April on the two-year anniversary of Prince's death. Toxicology tests concluded that the entertainer died from an accidental overdose of the opioid fentanyl. While it's been around since the 1960s, only recently has it dominated headlines in our country's opioid epidemic that's left thousands dead. We sat down with the executive director of the Hazelden Betty Ford facility in Naples, Brenda Iliff, to learn more about fentanyl. So let's hear that conversation now. So first, what is fentanyl?
Well, fentanyl is a powerful drug that if anybody's ever had surgery, they probably have had fentanyl. When they tell you to start counting back from 100 to 99 to 98 to 97, they're probably injecting you with fentanyl. It's a drug that is a great pain reliever, even when the body's getting a strong injury like surgery. What happens, though, is when you quit counting, they are immediately taking over your respirations for you and putting a tube down your throat and doing your breathing for you. It's that powerful of a drug. It used to be just used in surgeries. And we did hear years ago when I worked in addiction, we'd hear of doctors or nurses who would overdose in operating rooms on fentanyl because they had access. What's happened now, though, is the public has gotten access. It's used now in several forms for cancer. For really powerful pain.
I've seen this like in patches and lozenges and things like that. I mean, if this is something that's used to knock someone out for surgery, why is it also now being used for palliative care?
When just for palliative care. So the lollipops would be used for people 16 and older, and then the patches would be for people 18 and older. And they do work for palliative care. The problem that we're talking about is killing people is the fentanyl that's getting on the streets. And that's generally coming through China a little bit. We're seeing coming through Mexico.
Okay. So what we're seeing is not so much, you know, somebody got an extra prescription and then resold it, but stuff that's brought in on the black market.
We are seeing that also. So we've had people in treatment that have gotten a hold of, you know, maybe their loved one dies and they go visit afterwards and they get a hold of the fentanyl patches or, we are seeing some of that that's legitimately going to people that are suffering, but most of it's coming through the streets. And it's really a small grain that can kill people. So if you think of a baby aspirin and you divide that by 300, that little grain can be put into another drug, which is what's killing people.
Is it the cocktail of it that's making people overdose and die?
Yeah, and people don't know they're taking it. So it's likely Prince didn't know that in his Vicodin there was just a little grain of fentanyl, but it killed him.
Well, and he was a small person.
He was a small person, and he was also not your typical addict. If you think of whatever a typical addict is, he was a vegan. He was highly religious. He was Jehovah's Witness. On his band tours, he said, "No drinking or drugging." You know, this is not a person you would think would die of an overdose.
Well, so now I'm kind of nervous because I've had a surgery. Could I have become addicted to fentanyl as a result of having gone for a surgery?
You probably could have become addicted to other opioids. Generally, after surgery, they do not prescribe people fentanyl. But they might prescribe you another opioid, which opioids are highly addictive. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. It's man-made. It's 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin. But probably you could have been prescribed Vicodin, Oxycontin, other opioids that are also highly addictive.
So then how does that happen? How does somebody become addicted? I mean, does it automatically happen the first time you take a Vicodin, or
no,
do you have to develop a dependence on it?
Most people, you know, for years we've known that after about 5 days on an opioid, people have a physical withdrawal, that they get a little irritated. They might get constipated, and then getting off it, they have a little diarrhea. Their bones might ache a little bit. It's the ongoing use that can get people psychologically into a problem with addiction.
Mm-hmm. In recovery?
I've been seeing people's lives change for over 20 years.
Well, how much have they changed with the introduction of things like fentanyl onto the market?
Addictions, and then there's opiates. Yep, it's changed the face of addiction treatment very greatly, because what happens is people can overdose so easily. So someone who maybe gets sober and they go back to drinking, they're probably not going to die right then and there, you know, or they go back to cocaine or they go back to marijuana or whatever their drug of choice is. With the opioids, they could die just on one chance.
But it's kind of like Russian roulette.
It is Russian roulette. In fact, there's a term that's called chasing the dragon that people, especially more younger people, we're seeing a lot of older folks die too because of the opioids, but the younger folks will hear about something on the street. So the cops make a bust and there's some bad stuff on the street or they start hearing about overdoses and they'll chase the dragon because maybe I can get that high too without dying.
It's like a challenge, like a personal best or trying
it
to just really.
For some folks, it is.
How hard is it to get off of? Can people become addicted to fentanyl? Because if you do it more than a few times, aren't you really probably going to?
Yeah. And usually fentanyl, if it's legally prescribed, it's going to be in palliative care. And by that time, we're not worried about addiction per se, you know. But we can be worried about the grandkids getting that drug or other people in the household that could be have access to it. Most people who are using fentanyl don't even know that they're using fentanyl. They're getting it from the street, and it's laced in something else.
Like people may be getting heroin, and it has a little
droplet
of the fentanyl on there, and that just to make that heroin seem to
Absolutely.
Perform that much better?
Yeah, it makes the high higher, and sometimes it kills you.
Oh, yeah. And so that's where the dealer just wants you to keep coming back to get his not-so-great heroin, but because it had that little droplet of fentanyl.
It makes the high higher, and it feels better.
How have you seen this impacting people that are coming to Hazleton Ford, Betty?
We're seeing a lot of folks at Hazleton and Naples who are using the opioids. Generally, because half of the people that we see are 50 and older, so yes, we have a population that's addicted to opioids who's 50 and older. It's not just what the news would have you think, the 19, 20, 21-year-olds,
yeah.
You know.
That's what you see a lot of. But, I mean, our population, it just is older.
It is older. It is older. In fact, 1 year, half the overdose deaths in Collier County were people 50 and older. So it's really – there's kind of two classes of people that are addicted to the opioids, and one is more the New England folks. Those are generally male in their young 20s. But then we also have the older folks who include a lot of women, and that's throughout the whole United States.
Well, in Florida, we had a lot of reports, I remember last year, in Manatee County.
Yes.
Having a lot of issues.
Sarasota's kind of the epicenter, epicenter for
That tends to be younger, right?
Yes, they tend to have the younger, and then also Broward County mm-hmm. also.
My guest is Brenda Isla. She's the executive director of the Hazleton and Betty Ford facility in Naples. With the two-year anniversary of Prince's overdose death, the word fentanyl is showing up in the news. So we thought it would be a good time to get an overview on this drug, which historically was not found on the streets, yet it's turning out to be a key deadly ingredient in our country's ongoing opioid epidemic. Do you have a personal story of dealing with a fentanyl overdose? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. I wanted to ask you, when you hear about people overdosing on fentanyl, does it continue to surprise you, or have you become used to this drug being that unpredictable one? I mean, it's been like for the last, 2 years?
Yeah, it's been out there 2-3 years. There's another drug that's out there called carfentanil. We're not seeing as much of that. That's like 10,000 times more potent than heroin. So that one is almost an immediate death. That's an elephant tranquilizer.
Why would people do that?
Well, they don't know they're doing it. They don't know they're doing it. You buy some heroin on the street. Prince bought some Vicodin, probably not from the pharmacy, that was laced with fentanyl. So people are unknowingly doing it.
But, I mean, that doesn't seem like a very good business plan on the part of a drug dealer to put elephant tranquilizer that's going to end your connection to someone who's addicted.
Well, the carfentanil, we're not seeing as much of that as we did like a year ago. The fentanyl, we're continuing to see. And actually, when you think of a business plan, you just have to put a little tiny grain in there to increase the high. And most people don't overdose, but some do. So
yeah.
They're taking the risk on it, you know, that this is good stuff.
And they really don't care if the addict's live or die.
There's
Because there will be more.
There will be more. Unfortunately, we've got a rushing river full of people who are addicted right now. The good news is we're not pushing new people into that river as much as we were. Prescriptions of opioids were down last year. That's great news. Some of our legislature, including in Florida, is limiting those prescriptions. So when you do get that surgery, you might get 3 to 5 days worth of the prescription, which is fine, but you're not going to get 3 months worth.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, people that are now scared to even take their pain medications.
You do. People are becoming – they're asking a lot more questions if they have surgery. Is there other alternatives? Some of the research is saying that the, you know, things like ibuprofen can be just as effective for pain early mm-hmm. on. So,
is it more difficult to people for people to get off of fentanyl and heroin than other drugs? And what is that detox like?
Detox is tough for folks. Yeah. I mean, you're thinking of people who are averse to pain, and then we do detox people with pain medications. So we can make it pretty comfortable. We call
kind of like
it
a step down?
Yeah, absolutely. We can make it pretty comfortable. But detox can include, you know, the shakes, bones and joints hurting, nausea,
diarrhea. How long does that last?
Usually up to about 3 to 5 days, usually, if people are going cold turkey. In our jails, people are going cold turkey every single day. People normally won't die in detox of the opioids. Now, they will die in detox of, but they're going to feel like they're dying. I mean, they feel horrible. So that's part of the, I'll do anything to not feel this way, including if my doctor cuts me off of those Oxycontins, I'm going to hit the streets because I don't want to feel this way. One of the differences with the opioids is that for most folks, you know, we get them off the chemicals and we get them back into life and they go to 12-step meetings or their churches or some sort of support group and on they go with life. With the opioids, those same things are extremely helpful. But a lot of folks, we do prescribe some sort of medication that can help with those cravings.
So I did a show a while back about an injection that we've talked about. It takes away the craving, the physical need to have the opioids for up to a month.
Yes, there's a medication out there called naltrexone that you can take orally. We find that our people who are 50 and above take it. And they're compliant because they're used to taking a pill a day. Uh-huh. So, and it takes the edge off those cravings. For the younger folks, we generally want, if we can, to get the shot in them before they leave treatment.
Mm-hmm. And so once they leave, though, what kind of other complementary types of things do they need in addition to, okay, the physical cravings have gone away, but all the circumstances surrounding that caused them to become addicted are still there,
absolutely.
You know, having to pay rent, not having a job or whatever, having alienated friends and family.
So it depends on the person.
Yeah.
For some folks, they might need to move to a sober house, a safe living experience. Many of the folks that we work with use their insurance, they come to treatment, and then they move into outpatient. You know, so hopefully we can be with folks for the first year or two if they need it, particularly the younger folks, and they do. So someone can help support them. Did you get your shot this month? You know, because people after a while aren't that med compliant, and so we want to support them and staying med compliant at least for a year or two.
Yeah. We have a call coming in from Todd in Fort Myers. Todd, what would you like to ask?
First, I want to praise the efforts of Betty Ford and Hazelden and Brenda Ellis with the treatments that's offered. But I have a question about medical marijuana, and I want to know if you think the use of that will ease the opioid epidemic in this area.
All right. That's a great question, Todd, and we'll answer that offline. But thank you for your call. What do you think about it? Is there any promise for medical marijuana helping take the edge off of this opioid epidemic?
It does seem like for some folks with palliative care, it is helpful. That's why it's medical. You know, the concerns that we do have around it is there's no other drug that we smoke as a society. You know, so if they're medical marijuana has been around for quite a while. So as far as an oral medication. So.
Yeah, they have the CBD oils and all the edibles and all that stuff. So
there's different, you know, making sure it's medical is a concern.
That is a concern. Well, and I wanted to also ask with fentanyl, are there a problem? What do you do if maybe you're a parent and you suspect your child is using things and you go and look in their room and you find what could be fentanyl? Is it dangerous to even
yes.
touch that?
Yes, it is dangerous. If you find fentanyl, do not touch it.
Or anything that looks like a drug, because, I mean, if it's microscopic, you know?
It could be in there. You probably wouldn't, if it's fentanyl, absorbing it through your skin. If you picked up a pill, if it was Vicodin, probably wouldn't. But, you know, you might want to put gloves on. We've known of drug dogs that have went down because of we've known of police that have went down, you know, so not died, but it can be really concerning.
Well, they'll have the Narcan shots. And I remember that then up in Manatee County, I think they were getting Narcan for dogs specifically.
Yes.
For drug-sniffing dogs in case they sniffed the wrong thing.
Yeah. It's highly – I mean, it can kill people, and it's brought people down. I don't know that it's ever killed a police officer.
Brought people down, like make them pass out.
Yeah, or get dizzy or awkward. And mm-hmm. So, but when they send those things out to labs, those people are in full body suits, so it can kill people, particularly the carfentanil.
Yeah, so, well, if you are suspicious then, I guess, of someone and you're looking through their things, wear gloves, and if you don't have to have a whole lot.
You don't have to have hardly any. In fact, it's almost impossible to find.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for giving us the lowdown on fentanyl. It's interesting to learn more about this drug because it's really impacting a lot of people. I really appreciate you coming in and talking with us.
Oh, thanks for asking us, Julie. And I would recommend if you have concerns about your kids, drug screen, drug screen, drug screen. That's a much safer way than going through everything. So,
where do you go to get that if you're a parent?
You could get it from a local pharmacy or take them to, you know, one of the labs, the local labs. So even having that quote-unquote threat out there can do a lot with prevention.
Yeah. Well, the fact that parents can go to the drugstore and pick up a screen
and
to make sure you're not.
And people can also pick up Narcan so that you have it in your home. There's a lot of good Samaritans now that are carrying Narcan just in case they come upon an overdose.
Yeah, that is great. That's really good advice. I really appreciate it. Brenda Iliff with the Hazleton Betty Ford Facility in Naples. Thanks again.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks so much.
Our show today was produced by Mike Kinnairy. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.